All right, Matthew, welcome to episode 119 of the Performance Advantage Podcast in the new Performance Advantage Podcast studio.
Pretty cool.
Today we're talking about why is sports in general so far away from the AI movement? And Matt's got a lot of intel on this, being in the, I guess, like tech, hardware, software space with Breakace. And me, I'm just like a tech nerd, and I've been using ChatGPT, Bard, not Grok, pretty hardcore. And I've been talking with Training Peaks, and then I utilized the Athletica AI software training system. And I had a play around with a couple others. And today, ending off kind of 2023, moving into the 2024 AI boom, which I'm anticipating, are we going to see AI movements in sport? And do we need them? Are we going to be out of a job? Like, where do you think we're going to go? That's what we're going to talk about on today's show.
First off, it's cool to be filming in person.
Yeah, so if you are the like one or two people who watch us.
Yeah, actually, did you see our Wrapped, our Spotify Wrapped?
Oh, no, I didn't.
I think like quite a few people watched the video.
Yeah, no, a lot do, like yeah. way more than I thought. It was like thousands of hours of watch time.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, really? Okay. So we've invested in a bit of this tech to try and be able to provide a better quality experience, both audio and visual, and
yeah, then I think the conversation will be a little bit more natural as well.
It does, like eye contact is
yeah
weird.
It is like you're a bit close, but
like on the camera, like look, I'm not that close.
No, yeah, but I think like it'll lead to more genuine conversations, because I think a lot of times when we're filming via video chat, we kind of have to dig deeper for the cues. To know like when it's our turn to talk,
yeah,
or something
true.
Like that, or
yeah.
It's hard to get the feel for when the other person thinks it's time to move on.
Yeah. So the question, which we'll put on our Spotify, which you can answer, is do you watch, and do you think we should invest more in the video aspect? Because what we can do is set up multicams, and then they just cut between us, so you get a bit of a like eyes on view of one active speaker.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That's an AI thing as well, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Because I wouldn't do it otherwise. Like hours
too much
to
time.
Try and cut.
Yeah.
Between me and you. Yeah.
Well, the reality is, it's pretty easy to cut a video chat and those kind of things. But filming in person, I think, maybe be a bit more.
Yeah, it was already a bit of admin to set it up. But anyway, Matt, AI. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Go. Are you integrating AI into Breakace?
Well,
the world's first brake sensor software combo for mountain biking.
Yeah, well, that's like an obvious future step. Like when you can measure something and you understand what other people have done before, how they've done it and how they've improved it, and you basically have a massive data set.
Yes.
You can give automatic recommendations based on what the data shows.
Yeah.
It's like we've done some basic things to like automate feedback.
Yeah.
Which would be really cool. We haven't released those yet, but it is 100% doable. The accuracy of it is going to be like questionable, but in the field that we're in, like so let's say for example, someone modulates their brakes too much.
What does that mean?
Okay. So they're off and on with their brakes heading into one of their key opportunities. So yep. We already have like some element of maybe we wouldn't call it AI, but like some sort of a ranking system.
No, I think that's what you do now.
Just call, yeah, I mean,
like algorithms are now AI.
Yeah. So we have an AI, and it already ranks where you can improve on the trail. It gives you these three places where it thinks you can improve. So one of the elements that it'll look at is how you modulate the brakes. So if you're off and on the brakes and not concentrating your braking event.
Yeah.
So very simply, we could give a recommendation, shorten up your braking zone or find a more concentrated braking zone in this section. And that's great feedback for someone who's trying to get faster. And we can definitely automate that based on what we see.
Yeah. So where do you think AI for you would be, like if we're looking at the large language models, which is kind of all we have available now via APIs and stuff, like where would that be valuable for you to put in? Would a chatbot be, like a chat integration be helpful?
Maybe. I think like that's several steps away. I think for something so new to dive straight into AI, well, I don't know. Maybe that is the way, right? Provide all this massive value, an insane amount of value right away. Because it's probably not that hard to integrate into ChatGPT to be able to like have a conversation about the key opportunity based on the data that we have.
Yeah, so Paul Lawson and his team at Athletica.ai, which is the training software that I used leading up to a marathon, really enjoyed it, and I wrote a blog about it, so I have some intel there. They've just introduced AI coach, or I guess like the chat, not even chat, is like AI feedback. And this, along with the feedback and my experience from using the AI like coaching, is why I think we're so far away from AI integration. And that you go do your run, you know, or your ride, whatever it is, and it's like, hey, congratulations, you executed your 1 hour run within, you know, you did 59 minutes or you did an hour. You did 100% of the time allocated run, and you spent this much time in zone two and this much, and you're like, I know this is auto-generated. Like, this is like something I can look at in 30 seconds. Like, I can just not even use any, like, well, yes, the software, but I can just use Strava. I just open up Strava, it has time and zones. Obviously, distance and duration is super easy. And so to have someone just like relay the exact same information you can capture with your eyeballs, and it's not, there's no added value there.
Yeah.
Like where I see it needing value is, so this is my point of view, right? With the, my conclusion on AI coaching at the moment is the nuance is completely lost. Like, so what I really wanted to be able to do, and what all of my clients do with me, especially right now, like we're leading up to Christmas, New Year, is we go, what do you have on? Like, okay, we've got, there's a turkey trot. There's the New Year's 5K. Like, okay, cool. So now I can like, we're not going to do an interval set on the 31st and then you've got the New Year's 5K, you know, like, so we just work around their whole schedule. And what AI coaching does is go, all right, you're at this fitness level, and it can measure pretty intensely, like your time zones, your time above threshold, like your threshold decay sometimes, or like anaerobic work capacity. And you get into it, and then it goes, this is your next 4 weeks of training. And then you see the week, and then you can't run Monday or whatever, but you can't really tell it that specifically. And then you can see the 4 week, and you're like, there's no way this schedule. So we can do it, because you can kind of change it around. You can do some drag and drop, but you like, whatever, you know, you had a Christmas party and you skipped Thursday's interval session. So now it's like, whoa, your whole training needs to change now, because you skipped this like crucial part of your training. And you're like, oh my God, now all my training's changed again. Like, can we have a discussion about this? And because it's missing all the nuance of what like people need is structure and routine a lot of the time. And then, yeah. And then you're like, you know, your clients hit you up and go, oh, there's, the club is going to be running this thing that I forgot about. Can I do a 10 mile race next Saturday? And it's like, how do you tell the AI that? And it's like, oh, if you're doing a 10 mile race, it's a C race, which means you need to do a 10 mile prep session. You're like, no. The marathon's still the main goal. This is kind of like, let's have a chat about doing it as a tempo. You know, like you want to be involved in the community aspect of this club event. And it's so, so far from that.
Yeah. I think we should set some of the language straight. I think, because I don't see AI coaching per se happening anytime soon, but AI training, I think, is probably more like it. Because I think what the coach does is provides that individual support. And for me to believe that a computer is telling me the right thing, it needs to be pretty advanced, right? Because if a person's going to tell me to do something, and I need to believe that they're telling me to do the right thing, that person needs to be extremely advanced. Because I'm not going to just take advice from anyone.
Yeah.
And setting the training, I mean, I say this sometimes, is that like actually setting the training is probably the smallest part of the job as a coach. Like the biggest part is communicating and building trust and building the relationship and a really deep understanding of the athlete.
Yeah.
That's like takes a lot of time. So, okay, maybe a computer can like do that really quickly, like get a really good understanding extremely quickly just based on a massive data set on one person.
Yeah.
Kind of comparing it to a huger bank of previously coached athletes than I could ever have.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe that, but still, I think like coaching is,
it's human-centric.
Yeah, it's very human-centric. I think we're far way off from having computers coach us, but we're probably not as far off from having a computer train us.
Yeah, so why do you think, in my opinion, every implementation of AI-generated training plans is pretty shit?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, I made a strength one for mountain biking, and it was sick. Like, it was actually really nice, and it had all the things that you might expect, especially if you didn't know the person.
I don't think this is justified, because you know exactly what someone should be doing, right? So it's not like you just said, write me a strength plan, and it was amazing. You're like, you knew the prompts, you adjusted the prompt, you said, no, it needs, because I did this as well, and I was like, all right, I need to, like, this is where AI is incredible, and like, it's like a really intelligent, like, someone to converse with, where I'm like, okay, I need to generate this strength training plan, because a lot of people were asking me for it. And I need it to be somewhat generic, but very specific to running. But then I need it to be modular, so that you can pull pieces out of it depending on where you are in your training. And like, I would have spent well over an hour in ChatGPT building this plan. Like, no, those are like, that's too generic. You know, that's too. But I really know what I'm talking about. Whether it actually saved me any time.
Yeah, I was like, just thinking that. Yeah. Like, you probably could have chucked one together in an hour.
Yeah. But you know how it is, you need like you need inspiration. Like, just with a blank piece of paper and you start writing it down, you get like distracted, or you just like, when ChatGPT like just writes out 24 weeks of strength training, or like 6 weeks of strength training, and you're like, oh, well, that is rubbish. No, here's what we need to do.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah. I've had the same experience where they started out terrible.
Yeah, you need
to coax it through.
Yeah, like, yeah. Whereas you would never just sit there and be like, okay, I'm going to need to write out 6 weeks. Because you need to do the same thing, right? You like write it out. Yeah, okay, so let's think about Steve, Stephen E, and what's another one?
Steve-O.
Steve-O.
Yep.
And you're like, well, this would work for Steve and Stephen E, but Steve-O is not going to be, you know, applicable. And we want this to be kind of a generic, like, here you go, get started with strength training for runners or mountain bikers, whatever it is. And there's a lot of brain power.
Yeah, definitely. I was just wondering, if you, let's say you have a coaching client and you build them a strength training plan, and you're like, yeah, I got that from ChatGPT. What would they think?
You're asking the wrong guy.
What do you think they think?
Yeah, this is
considering all the work that you had to put into getting the right thing out of it.
I know, this is the part that I've been thinking about, because, like, yeah, I got it from ChatGPT, but I 50-50.
Yeah.
Me and ChatGPT were like in it together, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what they'd think. Like, they're not employing me for strength training.
Right.
So it'd be a different story. If it was like, oh yeah, I like got your whole marathon build up from ChatGPT. You're like, why?
Yeah, that it'd be, I think of it this way, is all the knowledge out there has come from someone else, basically. So we basically bring all that information together in one place, no matter where we got it. So whether your knowledge and strength training comes from YouTube, or it comes from a textbook, or it comes from what Steve told you at the gym, like that had to come from somewhere. And you weren't going to just make up some exercise anyway. And if you did, that'd be a huge red flag for me as well. So the fact that you got knowledge from somewhere decent, I'd be like, oh yeah, well, that's pretty good.
I think we have...
Getting it from a computer is like a different step though. So
we have an extensive background knowledge in filtering bullshit, right? Like that's what I think is my value add.
Yeah.
Like maybe another coach, maybe with equal experience. It's like, well, when I ask ChatGPT something, or I read a Reddit forum, or watch a YouTube video, be like, yeah, but I remember when Andrew Jones did the maximal lactate steady state study on like the gold standard of critical power. You're like, oh, did anyone else read that? You know, like,
yeah,
we spent years having to like cite every point of information in which we drew a conclusion.
Yeah,
and that's ingrained in us.
Yeah,
to just not take anything at face value. 100%. And how often has ChatGPT been wrong?
All the time.
All the time.
Honestly,
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. Pretty bad a lot of the time. And it's good to be able to catch that.
Really? And this is where we're at now. With I think no one wanting to integrate it into their systems.
Yeah.
Where you're like, we were talking about this for your break case, where you're like, and this is with the AI thing that I used with Paul stuff, and it gives a clearly wrong recommendation.
I know. Yeah,
that's you're like,
scary.
Well, just on basis, I can't really trust it anymore.
Yeah.
Like I can't trust it. I do that. Like I accidentally put when I write workouts, sometimes I'll copy a workout but vary it. Or like I've got pre-made workouts, like ones I've built over the last decade, right? And so I'll plop in, let's say, 3x10. And then I look at it overall the month. Like, you know what? I think rather than 3x10 tempo, that might be better as like a 4x6 threshold, like the way that the training's panning out. So then I'll like change the structured workout in the description, but I'll forget to change the title.
Yeah. I've done that
before.
Yeah,
everyone, right? Because it's like title, structured workout, description. You got to change all three. Otherwise, and so people hit me up.
Yeah.
But they can, and I'll tell them why.
Yeah.
Like why it's a mistake.
Yeah, that,
and that's human error. But when you are relying on AI, there is no, it's just you and them.
Yeah.
There's no, and so you're like, well, how many more of these issues, and can I ask it? And a lot of the times you can't when it's just a generative.
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting point because, man, that would have taken you ages to change that. And not ages in like this that it's a whole day, but to change a workout to a different one. That's really something a computer could do. Like, that's probably where the value is in having AI, like basically have AI help you not make mistakes. Because if you do a calculation using a computer, it is going to be right because they get logic bang on. They make way less error than humans.
Yeah.
But if you get a computer to like spit facts and create a story and then build a training plan and all that stuff and act like a human would using all this logic that's kind of built into it, I think that's kind of where the mistakes happen.
Or it's learning. It doesn't know when it's learning something wrong.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like,
yeah,
it's crawling the internet, and it's reading all the shit posts from Reddit.
Oh, dude, I know this is, and this is another problem, because like every time I read something on Reddit or whatever about mountain biking, or especially about braking, because no one knows what they're talking about, and I definitely do. Like, not to be like big headed or anything, but I know a lot about braking, and I've measured.
You wrote the book.
Yeah, like
two books.
Yeah, well, yeah, thesis and yeah, a book for people to be able to use it. And most people have never measured it, and they're just saying things about braking that are just untrue. So when I think what we might have talked about this before, is super annoying, because I'm also trying to gain knowledge in other fields as well, where I have my other interests.
You've talked about this.
Yeah, so like
you read the crypto and the finance ones, and you're like, these guys know what they're talking about.
No way. I know those guys have no idea, because they're like investing in Dogecoin, RIP. Like, if they're talking about like something, let's say hunting related, which is probably what I would read if I went on Reddit, maybe I'd be like, damn, that sounds good. Like, that's some pretty damn good advice.
Yeah.
And then knowing what I know as an expert in one field, like, shit, like probably half of this information is completely wrong. Like, where do I find good information? It's really hard. Like, man, if Reddit is your source of knowledge, first off, you got bigger problems, right? But where do we get good information? Like, there's no real good place to get what's the word where like someone brings all the information together?
Curate.
Yeah, curated information. Like, the language models should be that, but we also don't know if they're getting all their information from Reddit, which would be that'd be a big stink, you know?
Well, there's plenty of blogs out there. You've read them. You're like, that's not really how the science works.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot. But there's also new science that comes out, and then there's... Let's just take carbohydrate intake during exercise, for example. If we look back up to 2015, it was every single blog or podcast or like transcript and all that information out there, even the scientific articles, are saying a maximum of 90 grams an hour are multiple transportable carbohydrates. 60 grams an hour is probably the set point, which should allow for minimal GI distress and maximal carbohydrate supplementation, absorption, and performance. And now we're talking 120. We're talking some guys in the Tour de France in a like transitional stage, or with the hill climbs later, they're up to 150. So now you're asking ChatGPT. I don't think it's going to be telling you that, because the body of knowledge is so tiny about that right now.
Yeah.
And so then you go, well, is that wrong?
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of my information that I've written has that in it, because I was basing it off of the science. Yeah. There's nothing for me to suggest, like, go above 90. Like, there just wasn't.
Yeah,
there wasn't,
you were told it's a bad idea.
Bad, to like, go. Really bad.
Yeah.
Like, go above 60 and you're starting to, like, risk it.
Yeah, so let me tell you something. Well, first off, I'll tell you a story about what I was teaching in sports nutrition and the story that I had. But first off, we need to also remember that science does always change, because as science is like constantly ever evolving, and as we get new information, we are able to formulate new ideas. And it takes so long to do a bloody research study that it actually takes a really long, and not only do a research study, but publish it, have people find your findings. You know, you might collect data today and someone will read it in 2 years. So their next study that they do after they read yours is going to be 2 years after that. So it's such a long cycle, and this is so slow, so slow. But we are constantly learning new information. That's why these recommendations change. So when I taught sports nutrition at Massey, we talked a lot about carbohydrates. And most of my knowledge at that time was based off my personal experience, the stuff in the textbooks, the research, and of course what you were telling me. And at that time, it was really popular to do low carb. So I was like doing mountain bike races, and before it, I was eating like a can of coconut cream. You know, like
we're
low carb. You know, we're doing low carb. Yeah. And I remember telling this story about the time that I did a mountain bike race, and it was a long one. So I carried, and it was self supported. It was maybe like a 6 hour race, and I carried a can of Monster with me. You know, obviously that's what you do. So I cracked open a can of Monster and like slammed it, and that's a lot of carbohydrate. And the knowledge at the time was that if you have too much carbohydrate in your gut at one time, like too high of a concentration, you can actually slow the emptying from your gut.
Yeah, yeah, because of the osmolarity concentration gradient. Yeah, can draw water out of the bloodstream into the intestines, and that's how you get the bloating and the shits and everything.
Yeah, and so I didn't know that at the time, but what I did know is what happened to me, and that I totally bonked in the race. And I blamed it on, you know, smashing that Monster, which, you know, and now the point I'm at now is like, well, what the heck is it? You know, what was the reason that I bonked in that race? Was it because I had a Monster? Was it because I paced too hard? Was it because of my feeding after that Monster? But I did tell that story for like 5 years when I taught that course about how I had too much carbohydrate in my stomach and I bonked after.
Yeah.
Find that on Reddit. You know, it's probably on Reddit, right?
What should I eat for my ultra?
Yeah.
Is like, just like, what shoes should I buy? What car should I buy? Like, you know, what sunglasses should I buy? It's like.
So what's the computer going to tell you, right? If the computer's looking at Reddit for like someone with scientific credentials shitposting, is like that where the information is?
But even. Like I've read lots of ultra marathon feeding studies, and they tried potatoes, you know, like just cold starch, like cooked cold starch, rice cakes. Obviously a lot of this cycling, there's a lot of more periods of quite low intensity, like below 50% VO2 max, 50% threshold kind of like exercise within a cycling tour stage, so you can metabolize or digest more complex carbohydrates or foods. So is it going to compare a cycling 5-7 hour stage, 10 hour kind of event to a 10 hour running event? I don't know, and give you the same kind of recommendations? And yeah, I don't, like a coach, depending on who you have, would be able to at least provide context to their recommendations, or they should. Like, okay, yeah, I've worked with 10 people who have done 100 miles, let's say, and this is the consensus from them. And then obviously let's try it in training.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
And see what your feedback is. But the main underlying science is going to be a rate of caloric intake. So it's like, regardless of what you're doing, you can't just sit down and eat a 3-course meal 3 hours in and then do it 4 hours later. It's like, you should maintain a consistent energy intake. And how you go about that is going to be dependent on your GI.
Yeah, totally. And like, if we stick with the topic of carbohydrates, like different athletes at different levels metabolize carbohydrates at different rates as well. Like, you need to be highly trained to be able to ingest and utilize 100 plus grams. Like, that's pretty insane. Most people can't do that.
Yeah.
But if you were...
Most people don't need to either, because they're not operating. Like, there's the other thing. You go, okay, well, Kipchoge, Kiptum, a lot of these professional marathon runners, we take a lot of data from the professional and elites, because that's where it's worthy to invest those funds and figuring out how to optimize their performance. Like, well, they just ran a marathon 2 hours and you're going to do it in 3.5 to 4 hours. Relative intensity is incredibly different, and you probably don't need a maximal carbohydrate intake.
Yeah, definitely. And it would, yeah. I was thinking about this actually when I was hiking the other day, and I was walking up this mountain, and I had my sicko running watch on.
Yeah.
You know, not running, but I was walking, you know, mapping.
No, I use hiking mode on mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My heart rate got to 200 beats per minute.
That doesn't sound right.
I was going hard.
Okay.
Like as hard as I could.
Okay.
Yeah, I was boosting with a heavy pack on.
Yeah, all right.
So, yeah, it was definitely
max
near it. Max effort. Yeah. And I don't know what AI...
Is that when you were losing daylight?
No, a different time. But I was trying to get up there before I lost daylight. Yeah. So, yeah. Same kind of story. But, you know, it's a night. Love that kind of workout. And, man, it was looking at the data. It is like a mountain bike race, basically. Because, yeah, there's small downhills and your heart rate recovers a little bit. Unlike running, where if you go down a hill, your heart rate probably doesn't recover much.
Yeah, yeah. And, again, context dependent. Like, if you're doing an ultra, you're not going to be pumping the downhills. You will actually try to take that a little bit.
Okay.
Easier. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I looked at it, I was wondering, I was like, what the heck would an AI coach say to me if I hit 200 beats per minute? Because if you look at the most basic models for like age predicted max heart rate, my max heart rate should not even be close to 200. You know, I'm getting old, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, 37. So my heart rate shouldn't, man, that's low for a max heart rate.
It's ridiculous. I don't know how that's persisted.
Yeah.
That advice. You know,
well, this is the thing. And we were talking about it as we were walking up the hill. It's like, well, actually for 99% of the people, actually, it's probably pretty good. And the same for BMI. You're like, but well, you know, most people that
you're trying to call everyone fat without calling them fat.
Yes. Yes, exactly. This is what I'm talking about, because BMI is like pretty good. Right, at saying you're overweight or you're fat. And someone, you know, everyone gets offended so easily. Like, well, this BMI is wrong because it's telling me I'm fat. Like,
well, so does the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you're like, but, you know, I'm just big boned. Like, no, you're not. Like, are you like a professional rugby player? You know, that's like 6'6" and 200 kegs or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever they were, I don't even know. You, like, their BMI would probably show that they're overweight, and they're not. Like, there are a few outliers where BMI
is
wrong.
I think the whole All Blacks were like obese.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
because
yeah.
We'll say how it works. Well, body mass index.
Kilograms divided by meter square. So it's looking at how much you weigh divided by like your total kind of area. Body size, I guess.
Yeah, so right. When a really high proportion of that body size is muscle, it just thinks that it's fat based off the bell curve.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, most people just exist here. Like, they're not All Blacks. So
yeah, they're outliers. Then that's why.
And then All Blacks aren't going to look at that measure and go, well, I need to like...
go on a diet.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like,
dude, you're shredded. So, like, it's... these AI, like, if the body of information is coming from known models that are like pretty damn good, like BMI, age predicted max heart rate, which are probably 99-ish, you know, or somewhere 90%+ accurate for most people, that's pretty good. But if the AI it was coaching me as I was going up that hill, I don't know what it would have told me. Like, slow down, stop, you're gonna die, like, error. I don't know. It might just be a bug and it might just shut down. Like, here we go. So, yeah, that did get me thinking a little bit about the AI kind of coaching and where some of that nuance comes from. And that's like a pretty basic example, because like as a coach or as the AI input, you would simply just change what your actual max heart rate is and it would sort itself out. But it is a complication that is probably going to need to be solved. But at the same time, it had me thinking, well, maybe AI training is going to work for 99% of people. And if you're a company trying to invest and build this infrastructure, which is like not trivial to kind of bring it all together, put it in one place and like actually get customers, huge, huge problems to solve that, to be able to like keep going to build these AI training models. You want to be targeting the 99% of the population anyway. Like, they don't really care about you. Let's be honest. Like, the nuance that you need to train at a high level, like, you wouldn't really be the target market, even though you used it and it, like, worked reasonably well.
But for Paul's thing, he is targeting the competitive high end, you know? Like, he's not looking at the... I guess he's probably looking at the 99% of the competitive... Like, of the iron... People who are going to do an Ironman, like, that's his bread and butter.
Yeah.
So that's already... So he's like looking at the bell curve of a niche.
Yeah. Well, that's a good place to start probably. But like, let's face it. Most people that do an Ironman aren't elite. Right?
No, but they're on another world to the population, yeah. The general population. Yeah, true. Because, so if we look at one, like the major marathons, London, New York and all that, we're talking 50 plus thousand people. Okay, so that's a ridiculous number.
This is how many people do Ironmans?
No, this is marathons.
Marathons, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, like on the day. Like up to like 70,000, I think, is one of the biggest. And you're like, now the most people are doing 4 hours. Right? And so that is twice as long as the world's best runners. Now, those people are not only, not like Ironman, where it's like another step outside, above, outside of that, of commitment to training. It's like with the marathon, you can get, I want to say, your everyday person of like that 99% of population who are like, I'd love to do Boston Marathon, I'd love to do New York, I'd love to do a marathon. And where do I start? I can start here for $20 a month and it will adjust to what I do. And because of their, let's say for the general person, their level of commitment, like it might not be like it is for us where training is habit and part of life. It's like they will need a lot of adjustments for, they might be still like adjusting to, get, you know, having a night out, being hungover, committing to training. Whereas like for our audience base, most probably, we're just going to go, I'm not going to have any drinks. Like I got a big session tomorrow. It's like, that's the focus. And then if we did, you know, if our audience base does 90 minutes because of whatever, and it was meant to be an hour 45, and then the whole week of training then changes, it like... that throws them out.
No,
Tuesday's threshold day. Like, why have you moved this on me? Whereas if it changes for the general population, like, oh, cool. Like, that's, look, it's adjusting my training to, like, how I go. And I know this because, like, some of my friends, like, they hit me up. Oh, hey, I've signed up for this half marathon and I've got the Nike app, or I've got the training plan that comes with your entry. And
they're probably not that bad, right?
No, wait, because it's the general model.
Yeah.
Right? And it's obviously not personalized, whatever. So for them to go above that into an AI-generated personalized thing where it's like, hey, your heart rate is, even if we're using 220 minus your rate, like, stop running 180. Like, stop.
Yeah.
Like, this easy run needs to be 140. So every single day now, I'm adjusting your intervals to easy runs, because your easy runs, you're full sending.
Yeah. Well, that's great feedback, honestly, from an AI. Like, if an AI could do that,
that'd be insane. It can. It does.
Oh, well, that's really good. That's really good.
Then you take a step beyond that, and then it starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how many different kind of adjustments and tweaks do you need to do to some people's threshold and training zones? Where you're like, you should be able to hold 90% for, you know, a couple of hours, but you are just so far off. But then your zone four, like your threshold stuff, you seem to be smashing it. Why don't we try this, you know, like this, or your you're hitting max heart rate during these VO2 max things and just holding it. Like, what's going on there? And your zone two seems to be way too high. Like, there's always that kind of scenario. Mm. And same with, like, well, should I use heart rate or pace or power today?
Yeah. I experimented with this maybe, man, it would have been like 2019, I think I started. I wanted to make one mountain bike training program for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a way, it's like, it hits some of those pain points where, like, you need to change your training, or you only, like, different people have different amount of time available and these kind of things. Basically what it was is every day had a priority number next to it every week. So if you only had 3 days to train, you hit the first three priorities. No matter which day they fell, you hit them on the day that you have available. And they're prioritized 1 through 7. I thought that was, like, I actually still think it's a pretty good way to do it, because everyone's kind of doing the right kind of intervals at the same time and at the right time, which is basically the most important thing of any training, is doing the right thing at the right time. And I think it hits some of that, and it also hits some of the things where you might not know what to do if you need to change something, or if, you know, you have to train on a Monday instead of a Wednesday and that's all you had. So I think that one did a good job of you know, at least attempting to do that. I gave that one, like, the first 4 weeks away for free on my website. And I just changed it so it's like a simple download now. I was collecting emails before, it's like kind of a lead generation, but it was sending so many notifications that I was just like, no, I'm gonna put it for free. Like, you can just download it from the site. Because it also it was a real pain in the system. It invoiced everyone, and then it had invoiced them for $0 because it was free. And then it had invoice overdue. I was like, man, is this sending them invoice overdue emails? I was like, I just need to make this totally free. And, like, yeah, tell them, you know, if you download it, you give us some help and get the real training plan on Training Peaks, which is the 12-week one. But I did think that was a pretty good way to do it, because everyone's so different. But the needs can be really generalized for a lot of people.
Yeah, so there's a local guy who set up a company, a New Zealand-based company, Squad Run, which is, like, semi-international, and that's what they do. They have a membership-based system, and you get your 7 days based off of your event, whether it's an ultra, a marathon, whatever, 1 through 7. And for a lot of people, it's perfect, right? It's like, if you were using the downloadable training plan or whatever, and now you've got a bit more specificity around it, but I see the implementation being a bit, what would be the word where you, like, just pick and choose? Priority number seven looks cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So then you go, okay, well, intervals are on day 3, 5, and 7. So that's what I'm doing this week. And
yeah, but, you know, if let's say you have a computer saying, no, do this one instead, you're still going to want to do the one that you think's cool. Right? Like, well, I know way better than, like, this computer. It's wrong
giving,
this time.
Giving it the option.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, like, my training plans are all set out in days per week. So I have 3 to 4 days a week, 4 to 5 days a week, and 6+ days a week. So that's what I've found the bins that most people kind of sit within. So then I'm able to provide best case scenario training if you are training 3 or 4 days a week. Like, here are the interval sessions that will help you get towards your marathon. And they're going to be different if you're then training 4 to 5. And 4 to 5 bin person typically can handle a larger volume of running, and is, like, I still bell curving it, you know, and saying, like, they can actually run slightly faster. So some of these distances can be longer, because between 8Ks and 10Ks, the duration may be about the same. Like, so you can make inferences from that. But what I'd really like is to be able to plug in an AI, right? So they can then fill out a bit of a questionnaire, or can quickly analyze their training and be like, well, they've got your plan and you're starting it at like 15 miles or like 20 Ks as their long run, but they haven't done that. And it's like, well, they're not like paying for me to, like, they're not paying for coaching. They've bought a one-off plan, but it'd be great to have an AI just quickly go like, oh, actually we just need to make these slight adjustments because starting off at this volume or intensity is not going to be advisable.
Yeah. Or, I mean, it just needs to be as simple as like helping you select the right one, right? Like how many days a week do you normally train? 3 to 4. What's your goal? Marathon. Well, there you go. Here's your plan. Like that helps a lot of people get the right plan. Yeah, right, I have off that. The bat.
Hey, I have that on my website.
Did you look at the camera when you said that?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we actually haven't been looking at the camera at all. Should we be doing that? Like we're talking to people?
Let's get the feedback.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I feel the eye contact.
Yeah. I can feel
that. That's why having two other cameras, one on me, one on you, and then the wide shot is what the pros do.
I wonder which one makes you feel like a fly on the wall, because I'm looking at the camera view right now.
Mm.
And like, I'd feel like quite like a fly on the wall if I was watching this. But if I was just watching you, I'd feel like I'm talking to you. But that's not really what we're doing. You're not talking to people, you're talking to me.
Yeah, but you want what to... Is it? Like, if you're going to engage someone as a viewer, you have to keep changing the shot.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, static shots don't pull in engagement.
Yeah, okay. Coming from a YouTube expert now.
Yeah.
Your YouTube channel's been blowing up, bro.
Yeah, 30,000 on the last week's video.
Wow, that's pretty good.
30,000 views.
Yeah.
That's, for anyone who's listened a lot, that we said this, like, I got monetized, right? And I was on, like, because I hit 1,000 subscribers. And
because what is it? You need 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours.
4,000 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was, I think, the end of August or September. Now I'm at, bit over 4,000 subscribers, and I think I got like 200,000 watch hours.
Dude, that's a lot.
Yeah. It was like, it's kind of mind blowing because when you see these numbers. Because, you know, it's not just 30,000 views on my last video from last week. It's like all the other videos that people then go on to watch. And I don't know how I feel about when you're like, oh, okay, so I've just had almost like 500,000 views. This 500,000 people have like watched some of my really shit old videos.
Dude, there are some shitty ones. Yeah, there's some terrible ones. I'd say more of the terrible videos are probably on the Performance Advantage podcast account.
Yeah,
we should delete those.
We should just like the 500 people who subscribed like 20 years ago just don't.
I had something came up the other day where I saw maybe it was on your Dr. Will O'Connor account. It was one of the first like sitting on the couch things that we did.
Yeah.
And I think
Performance Advantage. On the couch.
Yeah. But that's on your account, right?
No, that's on the Performance Advantage account.
I don't know where it popped
up. Do you know
what
kind of gave me a bit of nostalgia? Or I can't remember. I don't know what the term is, but here we are.
It's come full circle.
Like, I think that was 2017.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Yeah. And would have been like mid. So like that's like 6 years ago. Me and you sat on the couch at our supervisor's cafe.
Yeah, before it opened. So this would have been like 5:30 a.m.
And now we're here.
Yeah.
And I just had my phone and like this microphone like with a long extension lead. But
yeah, but we still, I think, gave some pretty decent information. Our carbohydrate shit might have been wrong.
that's what I'm confident in. Yeah. Like, although my videos and my vlogs and stuff are like, you know, the quality shit and like the structuring of YouTube videos is all shit. It's like, I'm confident the information's good.
Yeah.
You know, that's not like I haven't like made something up and then changed it.
Mostly around carbohydrates. That's where your opinions changed a lot, probably.
Yeah. Only in volumes of intake. Mm. But even still, like I'm still not telling most people to go have 120.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, there's no... I'm still saying that 90's still going to be the maximum for most people. Yeah. And that in a marathon for most people who are running probably 3.5, my audience may 3.5, 3 to 3.5, 60 or 90 is still going to be okay. You're not going to get a maximal performance boost out of an extra 20, 30, 40 grams. Then there's actually a really good podcast I listened to with Tim Noakes. And he was saying that there is no current research that suggests that there is an increase in carbohydrate oxidation above like 40 grams, he reckoned, which he considered would be the minimum viable dose for performance. And beyond that, especially beyond getting up towards the 120s, is it's some kind of cognitive stimulant, and that maintaining a high blood sugar throughout an event is going to provide some kind of like, yeah, I don't know, cognitive enhancement or neural engagement to allow for a more sustained performance. So how that works, I don't know. I guess maybe because of the sensory feedback system within the liver, when the body is confident that carbohydrates are not going to run out or on the decline, it wouldn't be doing any anticipatory regulation, which is his whole thing around the central governor. So I don't know, ask AI about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it would say. All right, so where does that leave us with the AI stuff?
Yeah, well, now just thinking about that anticipatory regulation stuff, and that brings up fatigue, right? And there's like, oh, yeah. That's the biggest thing I see AI getting wrong currently, or the current, say, AI-generated training plans within Garmin, where they're leveraging a lot of HRV data, so heart rate variability, to estimate fatigue and current levels of fatigue. And they're saying that because your HRV, your heart rate variability, which is a measure of, I guess, the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous input systems, which alter the beat-to-beat variability in your heart. And when that becomes longer and more spaced out, there is a higher input of parasympathetic nervous system input, essentially calming you down, which means you may be over tired. Long story short, it's like you're getting tired, you need to chill. And so it chills you. Like, oh, you're meant to do, you know, some 1K intervals, some threshold stuff. Now you're just going to do 10K easy. But it's very reactive. Whereas, you know, was that a physical stimulation from yesterday's training that caused HRV? Was it crap sleep? Was it a night out, which may not influence your physical capabilities? And subsequently, you should just execute the training,
yeah,
and get through the week. But the advice shouldn't be altered your training. It should be you need to enhance your level of recovery and sleep tonight. Like, the prescription should be for an additional hour of sleep, not a reduction in your training stimulus. Because so I think
that is interesting, because I remember this a similar discussion when power meters came out.
Yeah.
People, so this would have been like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We're talking. People said that training with power meters, you have a tendency to overtrain because you're always trying to hit the number. And if you're trying to hit the number, it doesn't take into account your training plan, where you have to try and hit this number, doesn't take into account your level of tiredness.
Yeah.
Do you remember people saying that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's still true.
It is still true, but that was an argument against using power meters.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what are you going to do? Train with just heart rate, you know, and like not have an output measurement?
Yeah.
It's like, well, come on. Like, this is 20 years ago, and that was the argument. I guess, like, I don't know. I guess I'm thinking.
But we were coming from, it's the same argument for Brakes. Like, we're from, you know, the late 90s, we had heart rate, that was about it. And we were coming from the, you need to feel it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it needs to be comfortably hard. It needs to be conversational pace.
Yeah.
Still
yeah.
advice I see today. And
those are so subjective, though. It's like...
Exactly.
Yeah, it was, I guess, just kind of a bad reason to not choose a power meter, really, is what I'm thinking. And, you know, maybe there's some parallels here with AI. Like, maybe if that kind of excuse comes up, you know, 20 years from now, basically 20 years from now, I guarantee we will be using AI for training.
Oh, 100%. I think five. I really think, like, within 5 years, you will be able to have me as an AI coach. Like, so I've written these marathon plans, like hundreds of marathon plans over the years. And I have this, we've done, like, how many courses have we done? How many podcasts have we done? To the point where you can go, you know what, this is what Dr. Will would say. Like, this is his system. This is my philosophy on marathon, ultra marathon, 10K, 5K. Like, this is my running training philosophy, my ABC system of aerobic base, consistency, and specificity. And this is how I integrate it into a plan. And then I can record everything, right? Like, all of my Zoom meetings, which I'm starting to do to generate summaries for clients. It's like, take all of that and feed it into the large language model and allow, like, API access so it can adjust things. And it's like, well, like Dr. Will would say,
it'll be a deep fake of you saying that to them. You wouldn't even need to be in the next Zoom meeting.
Yeah, but we can already do that.
Yeah.
Through, there's this one app, AI app, Descript. You just feed it a whole bunch of your podcasts and it generates your voice. It generates your voice. And then you can edit things. Like, I can edit the script, so the transcript, and I can say, like, I don't know, I made a mistake. I said 90 grams carbohydrate instead of 120, right?
Yeah.
I can cross that out in the transcript, type it in, and it would fill it with my voice saying 120. Wow.
That's pretty good. Cause yeah. I filmed it's the video
rubbish.
Yesterday.
Like, it's rubbish at the moment. Like, I'd have to spend, you know, we're talking like hundreds of dollars a month for the premium version of this thing. But that's now. That is now.
Yeah. That's cool. It would help me yesterday, actually. I made a mistake in one of my videos I was recording.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I see it happening so fast. But I see that being the investment and advancement in basing off, like, probably individual capturing a system and philosophy rather than trying to take a generic approach to trying to solve everyone's problem with Garmin Connect, because they almost have too big a data set.
They have a big data set.
Yeah, once they can differentiate better the levels of capability.
Yeah. We look at this, actually. We look because we're able to, like, our breaking data is all cloud-based.
Yeah.
So I'm able to access that in the cloud and kind of download it and look at it.
Yeah. And as well as all the information you're stealing from people's phones, like their bank accounts.
Dude, I don't even know why people are worried about that, because first off, you'd never get your app, like, on the Play Store or, like...
On the App Store.
Yeah, you'd just never get it on there if it was doing that stuff. They audit those.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. So, man, I used to be worried about, like, allowing location, because, like, oh, man, who's following
Yeah, me? You had your, like, camera type.
I still do that on my laptop. You don't?
Such a contradiction. What?
Well, yeah, I think...
What are you up to, bro?
I don't. I'm just standing at my desk, really. But where was I going with that? We have a lot of data. A lot of data. Like millions and millions of pizzas burned through breaks, basically, of data. But still, context is incredibly important.
Mm.
And that's one thing that you don't get when you're looking at just data. So I'm just almost thinking about Garmin and like the data that they'd have. They'd have billions. Training Peaks would have billions of workouts completed.
Yeah.
And obviously that's good because they can use that to improve their product. But also all of it's lacking context.
Yeah.
So there needs to be like maybe some way to gather context.
This is where the large language model comes in and you need to be able to converse with it.
Yeah.
Because this is what I was saying right at the top of the show was like, when I used it, I couldn't provide context to why for me as a discussion point, this was too much training leading into my race. I would never do this amount of training leading into a race. Like I just like physiologically, maybe it's like, maybe this is what AI suggests, but I know it's just too much for me. I'm not going to do this.
Well, yeah, even context in the execution of what you did. Like, well, why did you miss that workout? Or why did you slow down in the middle part of your tempo? Like, well, it was probably terrain-based. Like, or maybe you like ran into a friend or your shoe came untied or something where, you know, there's your heart rate remained elevated and your power went down. So what the heck's going on there? And then what does the output look like after it analyzes that data? Well, without context, it's hard to know. But if you know that Will stopped to like tie shoes or I don't know what the heck else you do, but do to like
drink,
put your data in when you're running, but you can get that context if you ask someone. So if the language model was able to ask you and then feed that into the AI, yeah, that'd be obviously super helpful. Like, cause context really is really, really important. So gaining that would be pretty key.
Yeah. So we're still a while away because even ChatGPT and all the others, they don't hold memory on you.
Yeah. Why? I don't understand why, because I've had so many conversations with ChatGPT and you can't like pick up an old conversation in a new chat. You need to go to that old chat because there it is.
And it's really hard to find as well.
Yeah, it's like I have thousands now.
Yeah.
You can't remember like what break ace is. I told you 400 times, you know, I'm like, just help me write this newsletter, man. And that's annoying. Those kind of things should be solved, but those are like, probably just thinking about how they might have to do it, those are probably like easy solves. There's probably like bigger problems that they're trying to work on now.
It's probably server space related.
Yeah, I mean, it's slow. Like if you're on a peak US work time hours, because so many people over there use it. But yeah, all solvable. I think you're right, though. In the next like 3 to 5 years, it'll become pretty important. And I think the people that try and resist it will be like the people that tried to resist power meters. They'll look back and be like, man, I should have just got into that straight away. But, you know, you always have like early movers, early adopters who are like willing to take things that have a lot of issues within them, within the product, such as ChatGPT. And I guess we maybe like in a way we're kind of like on the early adopter side, even though it's been out for ages now. But there are some people that probably won't touch it and won't try and push it to help build training plans, but I'm sure we will be doing that really soon, you know?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks for appreciate that.
It. Thanks for coming along.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a nice space.
Hey, remember, if you've listened through, tell us, give us your feedback on the video, on the audio even quality. I think it's a lot better.
It is. But one thing I was thinking is we just kind of sat here.
Oh, do you want to like do some dancing? Or
well, you know, like I was
spam for.
If I'm talking at the computer, I'm talking a lot with my hands. And this whole time, I've just been like holding the microphone.
Are you? Do you? I don't know if you do.
Talk with my hands.
Yeah.
Dude, I was judging myself so hard with my recording yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk a lot with my hands.
So I get, you know, 99% positive comments on my YouTube channel. One dude's just like, why has he got such shifty eyes? Why won't he make eye contact? I was like, there's so many things to pull out of that comment of like, one, thanks for the feedback. I will try and make more eye contact with the camera lens. Like, you, like what's he thinking?
What did you say to him?
I said, thanks. I'm just getting used to being on camera, I guess. Because it helps with the algorithm to reply to all the comments.
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of funny as well. But yeah, you just, there'll be someone who says you move your hands too much, and someone says, I love how much he moves his hands.
It's a weird thing to take away from a training video. It's like, wait, I guess he doesn't trust you because...
I don't know how much time he has on his hands to just make that comment.
Yeah. I'll just move on with my life, really.
Yeah, I'll be like, he's not really making eye contact.
I don't care.
I should comment that. All these other comments are just questions about the content. Yeah. About, like, you know, I don't know, how do you use your zones, blah, blah, blah.
Maybe you should invite him on as, like, a featured guest or something. And give him a chance for the spotlight, you know?
Yeah, go on. Go on! You do it. I'll make him cry.
Yeah.
Like he made me cry.
No. Yeah, I'm sure you were really upset about it.
Well, I brought it up. So. Anyway, all right. Thanks, everyone. Here we go, Matt. Do something with your hands.
Yep. There it is. I moved my hand.
Okay. See you later. See you next time, everyone.
See ya.